Hey mamas, it's Megan here from the VBAC Link. You know how finding the right VBAC supportive provider can truly make all the difference. Well, finding the right diaper is sometimes just as tough. When searching for a supportive provider, check out our supportive provider list linked in the show notes. And when searching for quality diapers made with clean ingredients, reach out to Coterie. Their diapers are ultra absorbent, they can help minimize leaks and diaper rash, and are made with clean, hypoallergenic materials. It's one less thing to stress about. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout to get 20% off your order of $40 or more. You can find them by checking out the link in the show notes or going to coterie.com. That's C-O-T-E-R-I-E.com. Hello, women of strength. We have our friend Johanna with us from Canada today, and she's going to be sharing her HVAC story. So for those who may be kind of new to the VBAC world or just all of the acronyms that the VBAC world has, HVAC is pronounced home birth after cesarean. So if you are one of those who really want to look into all of your options for birthing locations, which I encourage everyone to do, definitely listen up here. We're going to be talking about a lot of really great things, including picking a provider and prom, knowing that you maybe had a provider that wasn't ideal the first time, and more about HVAC. So we are going to be diving into a lot of really, really great juicy topics. But in place of our review today, Johanna and I are actually going to talk a little bit more about picking the right provider. So Johanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I am so excited for you to be with us today and so grateful that you are here to talk about this topic because, like I was saying before we pressed record, I see daily in our community, every single day, and not even just our community, in other VBAC communities, or this is weird, but like people's statuses, like my friends and family's statuses on Facebook where they, you know, where you type like, hey, I'm looking for this, or I'm feeling very frustrated, or I need prayers. People will seriously say like, I don't know what to do, you guys. Has anybody ever heard of VBAC? On their own status, but especially in the VBAC groups, I see people and I just want to yell like, hey, you over there, you're with the wrong provider or hey, you should move. And that's a really hard thing because especially when I type that, it can be like, oh my gosh, who is this broad telling me that I'm with the wrong provider and that I chose wrong? And I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to say you chose wrong. Like, how dare you choose wrong? It's just like, hey, what you're telling us in this community is screaming you're with the wrong provider. So Johanna, you kind of mentioned before we pressed record that you realized after your first birth that you were with the wrong provider. What made you realize that you were with the wrong provider? And were there signs during pregnancy that you recognized and maybe kind of pushed away? Or was it really not something that you recognized until after? Because I know really it can go both ways.
Yeah, I think that there was signs during the pregnancy. I mean, one of them, and I just didn't listen to my gut because you don't know what you don't know. And mm-hmm. I put too much blind faith that like it was all going to work out. Mm-hmm. But I never felt comfortable with her. I didn't have a good like just connection with her. Mm-hmm. I was asking a lot of questions about what I can be doing because I wanted my first birth, I really wanted to be a home birth. Mm-hmm. And she basically just didn't give me very much information about what I can be doing. She kind of like sent me to like your generic birth course through the hospital. Yeah, I didn't really feel like she was really invested in the outcome of my birth. I was just kind of like another one of her patients. So I didn't mm-hmm. feel great about that. And then when push came to shove with my birth and things weren't going great, she kind of threw her hands up in the air and just kind mm-hmm. of like took a step back and didn't really like advocate for me or like try and like help me through things. Yeah. So I was just like, I was left with a pretty like unpleasant taste in my mouth.
Yeah. I mean, exactly what you said just a minute ago. You didn't feel that she was invested in the outcome of your birth. And then it proved to be true when she just kind of threw her arms up. So you had that experience, and you're not alone, right? There's so many of us out there, me too, me included, and a lot of people on the VBAC Link team included. Like, we have all been in a similar situation where our providers threw our hands up, weren't invested in our birth and our experience, and had to go out there and seek that support that we deserved. So if there's anything we talk about on the VBAC Link, and I'm sure you've heard it, it's find the right provider. I mean, seriously, you guys, I say it daily, every single day. If I'm not typing it, if I'm not voice memoing it, if I'm not saying it in my mind, it's find the right provider. So, Johanna, what would you give for tips for our listeners to find that right provider? And how did you find that right provider?
So I found my midwife that I used for my second birth and I'm actually using again for my third birth because I am 31 weeks pregnant today.
Oh my gosh. Yay.
I found her actually because when I got pregnant for the second time, the first thing I did was get a doula and I asked her for recommendations on a VBAC friendly midwife and she had recommended this midwife. So immediately I was like, yes, I would like to meet her. And when I met her, it was just like instantly I felt so much more at ease. So I would say like going with your gut, if something doesn't feel right, even if it's like the tiniest thing, just look for a new provider. Just find someone where it feels right.
I can relate to that so much because that's how I was feeling. Like, I was searching, I was searching, I was searching. I mean, it was kind of insane. I interviewed a lot of providers, but that's what I was searching for, is that immediate, like, oh, I'm in the right place. You are my person. And it took me a long time. And that sucks. It sucks that it took so long. And I know that in some areas, they're really rural, and it's almost impossible to find that feeling, but I agree. So just as a reminder for those looking, before we get into the story, I wanted to make sure that you know, ask open-ended questions. Do not say, do you support VBAC, yes or no? Do not say, do you support me to go to 40 weeks, yes or no? Right? Like, let's ask open-ended questions. How do you feel if I approach my due date and I haven't had a baby yet? How do you feel about VBAC? What is your experience with VBAC? How do you support your VBAC clients to make sure, or patients, to make sure that they get the birth that they want? How do you advocate for them? Right? Asking these big open-ended questions. And then, like Johanna said, diving deep. What is your heart and your gut feeling and saying? If at any point, you are questioning, which I think is when people come out on social media. That is when I think they're writing, "Hey, I'm feeling defeated. Hey, this is what my provider said." It's because they're doubting, they're questioning. That's their intuition, right? If that even comes into play at all, it's time to switch. It is time to switch. And first-time parents, if you are out there listening, this applies to you too, right? We have to avoid these unnecessary cesareans, which are happening all over the world. We have to follow our intuition. So that's another thing we talk about until we're blue in the face. Intuition. So follow that intuition, ask open-ended questions, really dive in deep, because your provider really can make an impact. And really, really quickly, we're gonna just barely skim the surface on PROM. PROM is premature rupture of membranes. Johanna and I have both experienced it. She's two for two, I'm three for three. Maybe you won't be three for three, girl. I don't know. I'm hoping
Yeah,
you won't.
fingers
I'm
crossed.
hoping you won't. But if you are, we know that it's okay. Vaginal births still happen, okay? But talking about providers, right? If you have PROM, which means your water breaks before labor begins, and just to let you know, it can take hours, even days, for your body to turn over into labor after your water breaks. But if you have PROM and you don't have a supportive provider, that is right there the beginning of a fight. And it shouldn't have to be a fight, right? But that can impact things because they want to get things going, or some providers won't even induce labor or touch you. They'll just, you know, or 12 hours later, they're like, nope, you haven't had a baby. You have to have a C-section. So yeah. So really quick, Johanna, do you have any tips for our listeners for that might have had prom or may have prom?
Yeah, it's difficult because especially when, like when I experienced it, I mean, I experienced it for both births. And the second time I really felt like anxious because I was like, oh no, I'm on a ticking time clock again.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how you were treated.
Yes. And I was lucky that I have a super supportive provider. And, you know, she was like, you know, baby's fine. You're fine. Everything's fine. We're just going to wait it out. But yeah, I mean, crucial to have the right provider that is going to give you that grace and give you that time and that space.
Yeah.
But just know the facts, like just, you know, arm yourself with information that, you know, as long as the fluid is clear, as long as you have no signs of infection, you know, they, at least here, they make you come in for non-stress tests, like every, I don't know if it's 12 hours or 24 hours when your water has broken, like as long as everything's looking okay, you can wait, I think up to 72 hours.
Mm-hmm. I've actually even had a client wait 5 days.
Holy smokes.
5 days. Close monitoring, you guys. Really close monitoring.
Yeah.
But it was nothing said a baby needed to be born. So 5 days is maybe abnormal. This was a home birth transfer to hospital. Even with 5 days rupture of membranes, the hospital did not make her, as I'm putting quotes up, have a cesarean or do anything different because she advocated for herself. But it really can. 72 hours. It really can happen. So, okay, we are going to stop talking about this, you guys. We're going to have links in the show notes to dive deeper into questions for your provider. What about, you know, premature rupture of membranes, things like that. So we're going to have those in the show notes. If you want to dive more into that, you can dive in. But we're going to take one quick break for the intro and then turn the time over to Johanna. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, girl, thank you so much for chatting with me about that. I really do think it's so important.
I think it just knowledge about everything is like your best friend when you're planning for any birth, but especially a VBAC.
Right. I know. It, you know, does suck that VBAC has to be like so much more intense in our prep and our research and all these things, because we're just moms going in to have vaginal births. That's all we have. That's all we are. Yep. But unfortunately, that's not how it's viewed. That's just not how it's viewed in most areas of the world. So yeah. All right. Let's talk about that first birth.
Okay. So I got pregnant with my first daughter, Myla, in the summer of 2020. So heavy, like COVID times. So that was scary enough. Because of like COVID and the shift in kind of culture towards like socialization and going into hospitals and stuff like that. Me and my husband decided to look into home birth, which was not really on my radar before. But the more that I looked into it, I was like, oh, this is like super beautiful. And I love the idea of like birthing my baby at home in like the peace and like quiet of our own space.
Yeah. And a lot safer than a lot of people think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like the more, you know, I kind of looked into it, the more I was like, okay, this is a totally viable option for us.
Yeah.
I had a pretty like uneventful pregnancy. I was very like lucky. I had very minimal symptoms. Everything went well. I didn't have any, you know, anything scary happen during the pregnancy. I will say that I didn't take the best care of myself. I am usually a pretty active person, and I totally just like didn't do much exercise or working out. I think in the back of my mind, I was scared that something bad was going to happen if I overdid it. It was just a lot of like first time mom anxieties.
Totally get it.
Yeah. Yep. And I didn't, you know, I didn't eat the best. I didn't take the best care of myself. I didn't do a whole lot to prep for the birth other than your typical like childbirthing classes, bringing baby home, like through the hospital, kind of generic courses that I think a lot of first time moms, that's kind of what they do, right? I read a couple books. I read like the, you know, the What to Expect books. And the I think I read Ina May's Guide to Childbirth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great book.
But I had like no idea what to expect, like when it came to labor and birth. I really was like going in blind, I will say. I just kind of put my faith in that my provider was going to like hold my hand through it. And that was a mistake. So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty uneventful pregnancy. There wasn't a whole lot to say other than it was COVID and everything was just kind of like scary and didn't really know what was going on. When I was 41-ish weeks, my water ended up breaking. It was like the middle of the night and I didn't really know what happened. It was just like a little squirt and went back to bed. And in the morning I was like, you know, when you like move a position and a little bit comes out and you move a position and a little, it was kind of one of those. And then I lost my mucus plug. So I was like, oh, I better call my midwife. So I gave her a call and she totally brushed me off. She was like, no, I think it's probably just discharge. Like I wouldn't worry about it. So that was another red flag, was her just like totally brushing off like my feelings and like what I believed was going on. So I kind of hung up the phone and I was like, well, I don't really know what to do now. I'm fairly certain that my water's broken. So I waited a couple hours and it continued to trickle out. I eventually called her again and she was like, okay, you can come in and I'll check, but I'm pretty sure it's just discharge. So I went in and sure enough, she was like, oh, your water did break. It is amniotic fluid. Look at that. So I was kind of
resting.
Like, well, yeah, I could have told you that. So I was like, well, what do we do now? And she was like, well, we can wait up to 72 hours as long as everything's healthy. That's fine. So we'll keep monitoring things. And she kind of like sent me home and told me to just like relax. She said, if labor doesn't pick up today, you know, go to bed and in the morning do a castor oil induction. So I did that when I woke up the next morning and nothing had happened. I did do the castor oil induction. And I will say that I will never do that again because it was horrible. Like it just, sorry for the TMI, but it just gave me like, you know, severe diarrhea and then nothing happened. And I was like super uncomfortable. So that wasn't fun. I went up, so that didn't work. And I went in for a non-stress test, you know, that afternoon. And she decided to check me and I had made zero progress. I was like not dilated at all. I had had zero like effacement or anything like that. So no progress. And I felt super discouraged. Like, you know, my water's been broken for however long at this point, 36 hours, I think probably. And I've made no progress. The castor oil induction failed. I had barely slept the night before. So I was like tired and I was just like stressed. I was like, when is this going to happen?
But at this point, you weren't really like thriving with contractions. Like nothing was like too intense to be telling you that there should be progress, right?
Literally not a single contraction or anything. Like, right. Nothing was
happening. True prom. And so your defeating feeling is super normal because in our minds, we're told our water breaks, we should be having a baby. But if we have prom, don't expect to be like dilated, right?
Yes.
I did too. Yeah. I expected to be way dilated and I wasn't.
So I felt super defeated. And like I said, I wasn't like sleeping. I barely got any sleep the night before because I was like just anxious for birth to, you know, get going. And I ended up crying in her office about how stressed I was to end up in a C-section because my sister had had a long, pretty terrible labor that ended in a C-section, and it was just not a great experience for her. I don't exactly remember what my midwife said, but I did not feel reassured leaving that that appointment. But we did end up deciding that, like, if I didn't go into to labor that night, I was going to be induced the next morning because I was just not sleeping well. I was not like able to like rest and relax because I was just anxious. So I was like, okay, I guess like my home birth plan is out the window, but at least, you know, there's a plan. So I ended up going home. We had dinner and I started getting contractions just after dinner, which was like exciting.
Yeah.
But then they petered off after like, I don't know, an hour or two. So we went to bed, had the hospital bags packed and everything ready to go for an induction the next morning. And labor started around 2 a.m. So it started on its own around 2 a.m.
And how many total hours is this until labor
coming? I think it was about 48 hours after my water broke.
Okay.
That I had the rupture of membranes that my labor actually started. I will say it was pretty intense right off the hop. Like, I hear a lot of women say that their early labor is like, oh, I took my other kids for a walk. I baked a cake. I did this, I did that to distract myself. My labors are not like that. My labors are like intense right out the gate. So, you know, I tried to eat something for breakfast a few hours after that. I woke my husband up. We tried to eat breakfast. I got in the bathtub to try and relieve some of the discomfort. Hung out in there for a while. We had rented a birth tub. My husband got that set up. I called my midwife. She came probably around 11 a.m. So at that point, I'd probably been laboring for like, I don't know, 8 or 9 hours. And I was not coping well. It was very intense and I was not coping well with the pain. And she checked me and I was at a 3. And I was like, dang it. I was like, and I, in my mind, what I know now is that it's not a linear thing and that like, it's not going to take another 18 hours to go from a 3 to a 9. But in my mind then, I was like, oh no, I can't do this for however many more hours because I'm already not coping well and I'm only at a 3. So I told her, I was totally deflated and I told her, I just, you know, I want to go to the hospital and get an epidural.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. So I think between the time that she checked me and I was at a 3 and the time that I got the epidural, it was about 2 hours. That car ride to the hospital, wow, was not fun. But yes, so in that 2 hours that it took between her checking me and me getting the epidural, she checked me again right as soon as it kicked in and I was at a 9.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was like when I say that car
zero
ride.
0 to 100.
Yeah, that car ride, like it was ripping through me.
Yeah, you were in transition in that point.
Yeah. And when we were in the hospital waiting for the like anesthesiologist to come in and do the epidural, my midwife and husband are like, you know, joking around trying to make me laugh. And I'm like, this is not where we're at right now. I was not having it because obviously I was in transition and it just was not where I was at. So yeah, she's like, okay, well, you're at a 9 now. That's great. So, you know, rest for like an hour and then we'll probably be pushing. The epidural was heavy. I felt nothing from like my ribs down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an hour went by and she's like, hey, you're complete. Start pushing. And I felt nothing and I'm trying to push. And she's telling me that like, you know, I'm doing a pretty good job considering I have an epidural, but baby was still high. And then all of a sudden, I think I'd pushed like a couple times and all of a sudden all of these doctors and nurses and like a bunch of people just start like run into the room and they're all speaking French because it's a French speaking hospital.
Oh my gosh.
So I have no idea what's going on. Nobody's telling me anything. They're all speaking a different language. And I was just like, can somebody please like tell me in English what's going on? And they told me that she was having late decels every time that I was pushing.
Okay.
So between pushes, she was fine. But every time I'd push, her heart rate would, you know, go down and then have trouble recovering. At no point did anybody like recommend maybe trying a position change or anything like that. Like maybe her cord was being pinched in that position. If, you know, oh, if only I knew now or knew then what I know now.
Yeah, like hydration, movement.
Yes. Doing something.
Pushing in a different position. Yeah.
Yeah, no. So the, you know, like I said, my midwife kind of like threw her hands up and kind of stepped back and let the OB like take over and didn't say anything to me after that. And the OB basically like let me push three times and then was like, nope, this is going to take too long. We need to have a C-section. Wow. And she called a C-section.
Wow. Do you remember how low your baby's heart rate was getting?
No, I have no idea.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, late decelerations are less ideal, right? Like we don't want them to happen late. Like we want that to be like recovery period.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there could have been some things done.
Yeah. I and like looking back, it's frustrating to like know that like maybe if like one little thing had been changed, the outcome could have been totally different.
Yeah, but you can't blame yourself for that either. Like it's hard to like look back and be like the what ifs, but
yes,
you did whatever you did in the moment with the information you were given.
Exactly.
So earlier we talked about how Coterie diapers are incredibly absorbent and minimize leaks. But let me tell you a little bit about their comfort. These diapers are made with ultra soft apparel grade materials that can help keep your baby comfortable all day and night. You will feel the difference. Well, your baby will also feel the difference. Plus, the hypoallergenic and free of fragrance dyes and other irritants keep them safe for even the most sensitive skin. Pair that with their seamless subscription service when you can adjust orders via text, and you have the diapering solution that can truly make your life easier. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout and save 20% off your first order of $40 or more and experience what we're raving about.
So, you know, I went in for the C-section. It went fine. Like there was no complications, but like being strapped down to a table in a really cold room and having the shakes and, you know, not feeling that, like not being the person to like get to hold your baby. And yeah, I mean, everyone listening to this podcast pretty much knows what that's like and how like it was kind of demoralizing and, you know, traumatizing for sure. But like, you know, it went fine. She was born healthy. I didn't have any complications, but yeah, the emotional trauma was like real. And not just for me, like for my husband too. Like going home, we got discharged about 24 hours after the C-section. And going home and seeing the birth tub like still set up in our living room.
Yeah.
Was like a very emotional experience. It was we both ended up like breaking down crying. Yeah. So had to do a lot of emotional like recovery from that birth, as well as physical recovery, because the physical recovery from a C-section was also extremely rough. Like I remember every time I would have to like get up out of bed, it felt like I was being like ripped in half. It's rough. But I knew right from the moment she was born that I would be backing my next baby, because we had always planned on having like a few kids.
Lots of kids.
Yeah.
I want to point out to everyone too, like the importance of postpartum support and postpartum help and planning. We never know the outcomes of our birth. You know, I didn't know the outcomes. I didn't realize that it was going to take me 15 minutes to walk 10 stairs up to my bedroom. I didn't realize it was going to take me 15 minutes to walk down the stairs, you know, like, and I couldn't be holding anything. And I didn't realize how just exhausting it was going to be to get out of bed to go to the restroom, and let alone taking care of a newborn baby and also thriving as an individual. So it's really important to really try not to ignore the postpartum period. I think it's easy. It's easy to do because we're so focused on the birth. And especially with VBAC, I think we're so hyper focused on that VBAC, that outcome, that experience, which I do not shame anyone for being. I just want to plug it in. Don't forget about your postpartum because whether it's physical or emotional, right? You guys, you came back to this space of seeing a plan that didn't unfold the way you wanted it to. And that can be very emotional, very traumatic even in some ways. So yeah, kind of having some resources for postpartum as well. I just want to plug that in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I did like no prep for postpartum for my first birth.
Me either.
And like it wasn't even something that like dawned on me to think about. And then when I was in postpartum, I was like, wow, this is really intense. Like the sleep deprivation, the recovery, the, breastfeeding, everything. It's like super intense. So for sure, don't neglect postpartum plans and getting the support that you need. So anyways, I ended up, I think from like a couple weeks postpartum with Mila, I ended up like finding your podcast and absolutely just like binging it and trying to like intake any knowledge I could get about VBAC, natural childbirth, like just anything I could get my hands on, I was like consuming because I knew that I was going to be back and I knew that I wanted to have a birth that was like as intervention free as possible for my second. So I ended up getting pregnant with my second daughter, Bailey, summer of 2022. The very first thing I did was I hired a doula. I already knew what doula I wanted before we even got pregnant because we had interviewed a few, and the doula that I found was actually a VBAC mom herself.
Love
And
it.
she just had like a beautiful, calming energy about her. And I was like, yep, that's who I want. So, like, that test, the lines turned pink, and I was already like getting her on board. And I ended up hiring the midwife that she recommended as well. I was intent on doing everything that I could this second pregnancy to set myself up for a successful VBAC that I could possibly do, because I knew that if I did everything that I could possibly do and it still ended up in a C-section, then, well, I don't have to have any like lingering questions of like, well, what if I had done this? So it's like, I'm going to do everything I can to set myself up for success. I was like super diligent with eating well, exercising, chiropractic care. I did all the spinning babies exercises, walking, yoga. I did hypnobirthing course, which I really, really liked, and I'm doing again for this pregnancy. I put up my like birth affirmations. I did all the things. You name it, I did it. And my husband was like super, super amazing and supportive, and he was there with me every step of the way through every appointment and did all the coursework with me and everything like that. So that was I'm very lucky to have a super supportive husband. I had a, another pretty uneventful, easygoing pregnancy, other than like a little bit more morning sickness and some SPD. It was pretty easy. I will say there's one thing that they make you do here, and I don't know if you guys have to do it in the US, but if you're planning for a VBAC, you have to see an OB around 36, 37 weeks. Do you guys have to do that as well?
Yeah, so not if you're out of hospital, you don't have to do it. Some midwives still out of hospital be like, hey, I want you to consult with a partnering physician, as in, like, hey, this is someone we would transfer to. I want you to consult with them. But with the midwives in hospital, they require them to do a VBAC consult. And it's pretty much a visit where the OB's like, hey, this is what you're doing. Here is your risk. Do you comply?
Yes, so I ended up having to do that, and I knew it was going to be a negative experience. I knew it was just going to be like fear-mongering and like throwing scary t statistics out. So I was already like kind of had my like guard up for that. And then it was also at the hospital where I had my C-section. So even just like walking into that environment was very triggering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I went to that and I was right. She kind of just like, she told me, you know, as soon as you go into labor, you need to go to the hospital and you should be, you know, continual like monitoring and epidural just in case. And all of these things where I'm just like, no, that's so like goes against everything that I believe will lead to like a healthy, happy birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely didn't tell her about my plans to like that I actually was kind of hoping this would end up in a home birth. Because my plan, I didn't actually mention this. My plan, I didn't want to commit to a home birth. I was a little bit anxious because of my first birth ending up transferring to hospital, that I would end up having to do that again and then have that, you know, crushing disappointment that it didn't work out again.
Yeah.
So my plan with my midwife was that I was going to labor at home as long as possible. And we were going to like play it by ear. And as long as everything was going well, then I would potentially have her at home. But I just didn't want to have that like pressure that I needed to stay home because this was going to be a home birth. Do you know what I mean?
No, I totally do. I mean, when I was planning it's not HVAC, it was a birth center birth. I sometimes like, it's like a downplayed HVAC. I mean, I was in a different home, right? And yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely did not tell the OB that my plan was to have a home birth because I just did not even, I did not want to get into that. So I was like, I just kind of like nodded my head and was like, okay, yes, thanks. Sure. Okay. Great.
Yep.
At one point also during my midwifery care, for the second pregnancy, my midwife was like, you know, it's standard for you. The hospital wants you to like sign a release form, like with a backup C-section date.
What?
And I was just like, yeah, I will also not be doing that. Yeah. And she was like, that is totally fine. Just sign that you won't, that you'll,
that I do not consent. Yes. Yeah. I do not consent in doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I don't need that ticking clock above my head.
No.
So, you know, again, my due date arrived and passed. I ended up getting a couple membrane sweeps to try and move things along, but they were unsuccessful. And wow, they are very, very painful.
So can I super quick touch on that?
Yes.
Membrane sweeps, that's a really big question we see as well. So, and when you talk about them being painful, that's actually a sign that like, the cervix wasn't ready, like it wasn't forward, it wasn't open, right? So if a membrane sweep is painful, it's a real big sign that, it's not a guarantee, but it's a real big sign that your cervix isn't ready. So quick rule of thumb, if you are dilated 2+ centimeters, like 3 or more is more ideal, your cervix is really forward, meaning they don't have to reach back and in, and you are dilated, effaced at least 75 to 80%. That's a little bit more ideal and less painful. But if they are going back, a lot of the times it's because they have to reach back and in. And so that is that. And then it can cause pain, prodromal labor, things like that. And frustration because you're like wanting it to work and it's not working.
Yes. So yeah, they didn't work for me. But my midwife did tell me that I was actually like 3 centimeters and she could stretch me to 4. So
right. So you were at least dilated.
Yes. So despite the fact that it was super painful and didn't work, I was still feeling very encouraged to know that my body was doing something.
Good. Yes.
Because you'll remember my first birth, I was like completely closed and like nothing was happening after my water broke. So I was feeling pretty good about that. And at about 40 weeks and 4 days, my water broke again before labor started. Mm-hmm. So it was another one of those like slow trickles. And it was the middle of the afternoon. So I called my midwife. And she was like, okay, come meet me. You know, as she asked if, you know, the fluid was clear. And I said, yes. And she said, okay, come meet me at the office later. And we'll do like the non-stress test and check you out and make sure everything's dandy. So I went and everything was fine. And we were just waiting again for labor to start. I felt okay because I had been through this before and I knew my body would go into labor. But at the back of my mind, I was a little bit stressing out because I was like, okay, I'm on a clock again. So I ended up, you know, I went home, nothing happened, woke up the next day, tried to get things going with the breast pump. That got contractions going, but they never stuck around. I ended up confiding with my doula about how stressed I was feeling, that I was like on a clock and feeling like, you know, when it's my body, why can't my body just like go into labor? And she was extremely like reassuring, and she came over and we just like talked for a bit, and I felt a lot better after that. That was in the, you know, the evening, the day after my water broke, and I was supposed to go in for a non-stress test. So I went and met my midwife for a non-stress test that night. And it was, you know, 36-ish hours after my water had broke. Still, everything was looking good. Baby was good. She was happy. I was fine. There was no need to like rush into an induction or anything like that. But she could tell I was stressed. My midwife could tell that I was a bit stressed. And, you know, she was like, it's fine. Like, we've got lots of time. You don't need to stress. And she's like, but it, like, I can give you these tinctures or whatever if you want to try them. It was like the blue, black or blue cohosh. Yes. And I was like, sure, I'll do anything at this point. I'll try anything. I don't care. So it was like these, they almost look like tiny, tiny little white beads. I don't know if they're always in the same form.
Yeah, sometimes they're in drops, like tincture drops, but more so as a like a, like almost like a little, like you said, a pill, like bead type.
Yeah. So she was like, okay, let's give you one now. So I took, she wanted me to take four doses an hour apart.
Did you put them under your tongue or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So she got me to take one when I arrived for the non-stress test. And then when the non-stress test was over, it had been about an hour. So she gave me a second dose, and then she sent me home with two more. So we went home, and then I took one, you know, an hour after the previous dose, and it was probably like 10:30 at night at that point. Yeah. And contractions started going after I took the third dose. And okay. I was like, okay, they're probably going to peter out again because that's what they've been doing all day. And I'm tired and I want to go to bed and I don't feel like staying up another hour to take the fourth dose. So let's just, me and my husband both took a Gravol because my midwife told me to take a Gravol and go to sleep.
What's a Gravol?
Gravol is like a anti-nausea medication, but it makes you sleepy.
I did not know that. I've never heard of that.
Okay.
I don't think I've never heard of, yeah. Cool.
Oh, interesting.
I love learning. A Gravol.
Gravol. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, she told me to take one and go to sleep because it makes you drowsy. So I think we had fallen asleep for maybe an hour and a half, and I was like woken up again with like very intense contractions. And this time I was like, okay, this is it for real. And like I said, with both my labors, contractions were intense straight out of the gate. So I woke my husband up. Taking the Gravol was a mistake because we were both super drowsy. And I woke him up and I was like, I think you need to call the doula because this is definitely happening. And so he called her over, and, you know, I labored in bed. I did my hypnobirthing tracks. I tried to, you know, I did a lot of like breathing through the contractions, and it was the hypnobirthing was super, super helpful. I will say that. And we hung out for a while and just did that. My husband tried his best to stay awake despite how tired he was. Eventually, I think I waited maybe a bit longer than I probably should have to call my midwife because I was so like determined to stay at home as long as possible. And I didn't want her to come and be like, oh, you're a three.
Right. See, your mind, even like in labor, we trigger back. We process things as they're happening from how they happened before. And that's, it's really hard to let go, but your mind was doing it too, right? You're like, no, I can't do this because I can't be that.
Yes. So what we waited, like, I think it was probably like, I don't know, I have no concept of time, but we waited like a couple hours or a few hours. And my doula was like, I think we should call the midwife. And I was like, okay, can you call her? So we called her. And shortly after we called her, I was having contractions so intense that I was having like out of body experience, like very, very intense. And I was getting like the shakes and hot and cold flashes. And in my mind, I was
transition.
Like, I'm going through transition for sure. For sure. I'm going through transition. And my midwife was not there yet. And she would not arrive for probably like another hour.
And you progress quick, like
Yes.
from history.
Yes. So by the time she arrived, she kind of like ran upstairs to my room and she checked me and she's like, okay, you're at an eight. So if you want to do a hospital transfer, like if you want to go, we got to go now. And I was like, no, that ship has sailed. We're doing this here. As long as Bailey's healthy and I'm healthy, I'd like to stay here. So she was like, okay, we're doing this here. And she called over the other midwife because she wasn't actually sure that it was going to be a home birth. So she didn't have the other midwife like with her. So she had to call the secondary midwife to show up. It was all very hectic. And this time around, I plan on calling them much more ahead of time so that it's not so hectic when they arrive. Because it was like, lights got turned on, equipment being like shuffled around and set up, and definitely took away from the vibe a little bit. But so shortly after she arrived, I was complete, and I had that very like stereotypical like moment where it's like you feel like you gotta poo.
And
Yeah,
sometimes you just hold back because you're
and
like, oh crap. Wait, do I need to go poo
yeah,
first? Or should I have, wait, what should I do? I don't know. I want to
yeah,
have the baby, but I don't want to
exactly.
poop.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I have to poo. And my midwife's like, it's okay, this is normal, you're good. And she was just like encouraging me to just like do what I felt like I needed to do. And I ended up pushing for probably an hour, give or take, in like a sumo squat position with like my midwife on one side and my doula on the other side. And then my husband would switch out for the midwife, kind of like supporting me on either side. And yeah, I only had to push for maybe like an hour, give or take. She did, her head got a little bit like squeezed at one point when she was coming out. So when she came out, she was in a bit of shock. And because of where I was in my room and the equipment was on the other side, my midwife had to make the decision to clamp and cut her cord and take her over to their equipment to give her a little bit of help, which was very scary. She didn't end up needing oxygen, but they thought that she might. So she ended up being okay, but it was definitely like a scary like couple of minutes where like I didn't know what was going on. But yeah, she ended up being okay. The only thing I was a little bit disappointed in was like the second time around not being the one who gets to like be the one to hold my baby and like bring her to my chest and kind of missing out on that experience again. But, obviously I was like amazed that I had done it. I had gotten my home birth. I had gotten my V back. I was like in shock.
I can so relate. We're like, wait, sometimes it's like you're so focused on that pushing, that baby coming out, and that, and then it like happens, and you're like, am I dreaming? Did this happen? And you're like looking around and you're like blinking and you're like, no, I'm awake. I just did this. I just did this. And you're like so excited and
And I was still like kind of in like La La Land because I had like labored so hard for like 8 hours and I was just like, yeah, you're kind of like out of it and just like in disbelief. Like, did this really just happen?
But it did. It just
Yeah.
happened.
Yeah. So that was a really good feeling. And it was recovery was like night and day. Like it was just like I could immediately just like go and have like a nice shower and walk back to my bed and crawl into my bed. And it was comfortable and I wasn't in pain and I had mobility and I could lift my baby up. It was like just, it was a good feeling. Although I will say that without the epidural, the fundal massage
Oh,
was
yes.
like really a really unpleasant experience.
Yes. So for everyone that doesn't maybe know, a fundal massage is something that they do after labor and delivery. They essentially put their hand, sometimes fist. Now, it's not like they punch you, okay? But like pressure, like think about a fist, look at the bottom of your fist. They put the bottom of their fist along your uterus, the top of your uterus, and they push down and massage. Okay. And they push down and they massage. And sometimes they do it three or so times. You take a deep breath, they do it, you take a deep breath, they do it. And why they're doing that is because they're checking to make one, make sure your uterus is clamping back down to its normal size right after birth and the placenta is out. It starts doing its job and going boop, 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 right back down to its normal size. But sometimes it can get a little boggy or, bleeding can occur. So yeah, you want to make sure that. Now, really quick tip, if for some reason your uterus is staying boggy and not clamping down as much, something you can try to do if you are able is urinate. Go to the restroom. That's a really big thing to kind of help the uterus clamp back down. And even if you have an epidural, sometimes you have to get a straight cath. And if you can't go to the bathroom, sometimes you can get a straight cath to release. But yeah, that is not as friendly when you're unmedicated. But take deep
Yes.
breaths if you can. Get that baby on your chest or hold someone's hand, your doula, your partner, your midwife, anybody's hand, and just take really deep breaths and know that, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't last too long, but yeah.
So going back to our chat about postpartum.
Yeah.
So, the recovery, vaginal versus C-section, night and day for sure. But I will say that my postpartum with Bailey was way harder than with my first. And it had nothing to do with the birth. It was like, I think she was asynclitic in my
Okay.
uterus. And so when she came out, she had a pretty bad case of torticollis
Oh, yep.
and a tongue tie, which made breastfeeding
Very difficult.
very difficult. And
Yep.
I got mastitis twice in the first 4 weeks, like a really bad
Oh.
case twice in the
Oh.
first 4 weeks.
Oh.
And I
Okay.
ended up with a bad case of food poisoning at 3 weeks postpartum.
Oh no.
And I had some like prolapse symptoms as well. So like I will say that there was like a lot of things happening in the first like month and a half of my postpartum that was like I didn't expect
Yeah.
and was very intense and difficult. Like there was, I mean, just for breastfeeding, like I was in so much pain that there was many times that I wanted to just like give up and be like, nope, never mind, like forget this. So having like good lactation support was like really crucial.
Oh yes. And get lactation support before you have your baby. It sounds weird. It sounds really strange to connect with someone about breastfeeding before your baby is born. But oh my gosh, you guys, it's so impactful. I mean, we've talked about it before with Lactation Network and other IBCLC supports. Like, it's so important. And same, I had similar. So my baby was born via cesarean. So in a cesarean, a baby can also develop torticollis too, like the way they are and the way they come out, But my baby had torticollis. And she had a tongue tie. So, very, very difficult, challenging for sure, frustrating, can impact things like mastitis. And yeah, it's kind of, I love that you pointed that out. Like, my recovery all around better, right? But that doesn't mean my experience was all sunshine and butterflies. And I really want to just highlight that one more time, you guys. Vaginal birth doesn't mean your postpartum journey is going to be the easiest. Mine wasn't. My VBAC after two cesarean birth was not the easiest. It just wasn't. So again, get those resources beforehand, right?
Yeah. And I will say, like, I don't know what I would have done if I wasn't with midwifery care and having them on call for the 6 weeks postpartum. Because I swear I called them like every second day about something that was going on.
Well, and that's more unique to home birth too, because even with the hospital births, midwives, it's not the same. They usually say, "Oh, I'll see you in 6 weeks," versus and you can call any OB or midwife, you can call any provider, but there's a different level of care and follow-up in that postpartum stage, and it's very impactful. It's very, very
Oh,
impactful.
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I love so many. I love everything, and I love all these tips. There are so many tips and nuggets along the way. Is there anything else that you would like to drop here for the listeners in regards to home birth or preparing or postpartum or any just words of encouragement that you may have?
I mean, I think that, like I mentioned at the start, that just like arming yourself with as much knowledge as you can is going to be like your best bet to get the outcome that you want and just feel like empowered throughout your pregnancy and your birth. So just arming yourself with as much knowledge as you can get your hands on. And yeah, getting a good provider, trusting yourself, believing in your body. Yes. And yeah, and setting yourself up for, you know, postpartum.
Yeah.
Too. Because that's like an important thing when you're so focused on like getting your VBAC is letting the postpartum stuff like fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
So yeah. Taking care of yourself afterwards too is important.
Yes. Taking care of yourself. We don't take care of ourselves enough, you guys. We like really pamper yourself. If that means you hire a postpartum doula, if that means you hire a house cleaner to come in every other week, if that means you hire or have family come in to help just whatever, lighthouse cleaning or holding baby or playing with toddler, you know, Johanna, she's going to have two. Okay. You guys, she's almost on her third and it's another baby girl.
Oh yes. Yeah. That's three for three.
So three baby girls. I mean, you've got your hands full in your postpartum experience, right? So really do it. And I think a lot of the times we, as women, I don't want to like totally like stereotypical. I don't know what the word is.
Stereotype.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I don't want to stereotype women, but sometimes we get into this space of like, we can do it and we don't need to spend money on ourselves and things like that. When this stage of life is so important to invest in yourself, really, truly invest in yourself because you deserve it and your sleep and your experience and your mental health. It all matters so much. So yes, you might hire a cleaner and you might be spending that money, but guess what? That's okay. Do it.
And when you're taken care of, then you're a better mom to your kids.
Yes. Yes. My husband always says, when mom is happy, everyone else is happy, right?
Yeah.
But really, really, you deserve it. Women of strength, you deserve to be pampered and loved and supported. So Johanna, thank you so much again for such a powerful episode. I'm so grateful for you. And please keep us posted on this baby number three. By the time this episode comes out, you will have had this little baby girl.
Yes, so, I'm due January 4th. So I will definitely be sending you a message when she makes her entrance.
Please do. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.